Good morning, everyone. My name's Dave. Welcome to Insights for Health, brought to you by The Healthy Habit at 451 St. Clair Street in Chatham, where we help you help yourself with your health. Our topic today is mushrooms and their medicinal health benefits. And joining us is Dr. Philip Rashotis. Philip graduated from the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine in 2004, preceded by an undergraduate degree and a master's degree in nutritional science, both from the University of Guelph. Dr. Philip is also an associate professor teaching clinical nutrition at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine and is a contributing author to various online and print publications. And good morning, Dr. Philip, and thank you for joining us on Insights for Health.
Good morning, Dave. It's always a treat to be here. Thank you for having me back.
Yes, so medicinal mushrooms, they have a very long history, don't they?
Tremendously long. People have been using various types of medicinal mushrooms, I would say possibly for over 2,000 years. They've been highly revered for various outcomes that I'm sure we're going to dive into today. They have a really incredible safety profile, and I think they generally go grossly underused. And I think a big part of the reason for that is we do have some great evidence on them from North American or European research labs. But a lot of the data on the mushrooms comes from Asian research facilities. And just sadly, often, this news doesn't reach the ears of North American doctors and scientists.
So that's where, even though there's that long history, and it's not just because someone thinks it's a good idea, but there's the science really to show that the health benefits of mushrooms are very valid.
As an MD, this is what we salivate over. We get so excited that you've got a substance. There's a list of things that have this long cherished history of use for a certain outcome, and then modern science comes along and says, let's actually see if that outcome gets delivered. And we start accumulating modern, well-controlled human intervention trials to see if these things actually deliver what they were touted for. So we get really excited when that type of harmony exists. Hey, the history said it for a really long time, and then it's validated by the modern human intervention trials.
Yeah. So there's a few details, Doctor, I'd like to cover with you at the beginning here, and then we'll get into the actual mushrooms themselves. But there's a lot of elements within the mushroom. And, I mean, there's a long list of those, but primarily it's the polysaccharides. Is that correct?
Right. So, again, the process of scientifically evaluating these things, it starts with what we call preclinical test tube animal, et cetera, and then you move into human studies. And we've realized this polysaccharide components of these mushrooms are really what are delivering the outcomes that we get excited about. And there's certain things regarding processing that are really required. So I visit retail stores all across the country, and I get a little disappointed because a lot of the mushroom offerings aren't doing what clearly the science says has to be done to a mushroom for it to work. And historically and the modern human studies all use hot water or steam extraction for these mushrooms. It relates to what a mushroom cell is, right? It's a fungal cell. It's quite unique. It's got a normal cell membrane like any other cell in the world of life. But then it also has this second outer ultra-rigid wall made of a substance called chitin. What we want, these polysaccharides, are within that inner membrane. Well, we have to get through the chitin to get there. So for most plants, grinding them up or a tincture extraction where you use alcohol is a very effective way to get active constituents from a plant. That does not apply to a fungus. They absolutely have to undergo hot water or steam extraction. That dissolves that outer chitin layer, and then you can get to the goodies that are inside. And it is a bit frustrating to see offerings that are alcohol extracted or are a physically ground up mushroom that simply won't do this. To finish that off, there are offerings that are a ground up mushroom, but then you use them as a tea. Well, that's very acceptable, right? Because now you're going to hot water extract the ground up mushroom. Hey, that works. Or historically, people use these in cooking. Again, there's going to be liquid in that medium, and you will be getting these actives that we're discussing. But I caution your listeners that you're looking for hot water or steam extraction. You're not going to get much benefit from a mushroom that's been extracted through a different method.
Yeah, and just to clarify too, I mean, chitin, if we look at what chitin is, it's similar to what's on the shell of a lobster. So to get through that and to extract from that, it's going to be that unique process of hot water, like you were saying.
Absolutely. I don't know how familiar your listeners are with tinctures, but we love using tinctures in practice. They are ethanol extracts of medicinal plants. Ethanol is a wonderful extraction medium, but it will not dissolve chitin. So specifically in the world of mushrooms, we have to rely on hot water or steam.
Yeah. So let's get into the mushrooms themselves, Doctor. Let's start with lion's mane. What's the benefits of lion's mane mushroom?
I really encourage your listeners to Google image some of these mushrooms. They really are phenomenal things. And you're based out of Southern Ontario, as am I. Some of these mushrooms are native to this area, most notably Coriolis, which we'll be getting to later. Go Google some of these. They really are fascinating things. I'm sure people that like to take hikes through your forests come across Coriolis, the turkey tail mushroom, with great frequency. Lion's mane literally looks like something that lives 1,000 meters under the sea. It grows on a tree. It's white, and it has these white tentacles, hundreds of them, even thousands of them, just hanging off of it. It's really remarkable. And lion's mane is the brain mushroom. That's the best way I can sum it up. We principally use it in settings of neurodegenerative disease, so things like dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, anywhere where you have degeneration of brain function. And we also rely on it quite heavily in the world of concussion recovery. So that's really what we use the lion's mane mushroom for. Again, always hot water or steam extracted. It also has some evidence in the world of mental health. So there's some evidence that it may help mood. I don't have it too high on the list for mental health, but anytime there's any sort of brain injury or ongoing brain degeneration, it's absolutely one of the first things we turn to.
There seems to be some evidence too of that nerve growth factor.
That's a wonderful point, Dave. I didn't expect you to go there. So I always try to focus on human level evidence. I think we can cloud things when we start talking about test tubes or animals, but there's one outcome that's been shown in a test tube. It's really the only time I'll ever talk about a test tube, but in a test tube they had a model of MS. So MS is autoimmune destruction of myelin. Think of, you know, your nerve as an electrical wire, and myelin is like the insulation on the wire. So MS is defined as your own immune system starts destroying that insulation on your nerves. And in a test tube, and we are not test tubes, let's keep that in mind. But yeah, in a test tube, lion's mane was shown to be able to basically regrow myelin around a nerve fiber. It's a remarkable little outcome. Don't want to overstate a test tube, but there are some pretty neat things that lion's mane has been shown to do.
Yeah, and it's, I guess that puts hope into the future, that as the science improves and
To my knowledge, that doesn't quite exist yet, but can't wait to see a properly conducted human study of lion's mane in MS. Any MS patient we see, we certainly have them on lion's mane.
Yeah, cordyceps is another mushroom. Can you describe cordyceps to us?
Right. So cordyceps, I asked people to Google image them. This one isn't very attractive. This one, I would say, has the longest history of use. It was revered by ancient Chinese emperors. They'd literally have armies of people whose job was to scour forests and find this mushroom. It's actually parasite-like in that it grows on a caterpillar. There are some, I promise that for commercial purposes, no caterpillars are harmed, and for commercial purposes, it's grown on a brown rice medium. But in nature, this thing almost parasitically attaches itself to a caterpillar, and it actually extends projections into the brain of the caterpillar and kind of hijacks the caterpillar. And it'll make the caterpillar like move into the sun, or it'll make the caterpillar move towards water. There's actually YouTube videos of this. It's really quite remarkable. So it kind of looks like a caterpillar because it grows within the body of a caterpillar. Ultra revered, this was considered the ultimate tonic. It was to help sexual virility. It was to help stamina. It was considered something to prolong life. So that's kind of a historic perspective of it. The modern science of it, and this gets a little controversial, but there's certainly something that's called adrenal fatigue. It's like you've been overstressed for a really long time, and you arrive at this state of kind of exhaustion. It's kind of epidemic almost in our society. We're overworked, right? Careers, families, running kids to various events. When you actually sit down and look at it, I do this with patients. You can literally sit there and say, you basically work 80 or 90 hours a week. You know, you put up with that for several years, and you end up burnt out. And what controls that, what you burnt out essentially, was your adrenal gland. You have two of them. They sit on top of each of your kidneys, and they control basically the stress response. Their primary effector is cortisol. So an appropriate response to elevated stress is to secrete more cortisol. But if that stress is long-term and chronic, eventually this gland burns out and it can't keep up. We see that as cordyceps' true claim to fame. When you've got people in that state of debility, exhaustion, they can't make it through a day, they can't keep their eyes open midday, as soon as they come home, they have to lie on the couch. Cordyceps shines in that arena. Beyond that, there's pretty good human evidence of cordyceps actually helping like athletic performance. People taking cordyceps will report a better sense of energy, feeling that they're just more, you know, that's the best way I can sum up what cordyceps is doing.
Yeah, so like you talked about how these are grown. So like these are grown in labs, or I don't know, I picture a greenhouse or something like that, but there's nothing from the wild, so there's no herbicides, pesticides, or heavy metals, etc.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. The one mushroom we'll get to shortly is often wild harvested, and it's done in an extremely sustainable way, and that's chaga. Chaga is you can't walk 2 kilometers in the woods without stumbling across multiple stands of chaga in northern BC. So it's very plentiful. That one's wild harvested, but the rest of these are typically grown in a commercial type of setting on a brown rice medium.
Safe with all medications?
That's a bit of a stretch, but okay. We wouldn't have concerns about lion's mane. When we get to the other mushrooms, whose focus is cancer, they have been aggressively studied in combination with conventional chemotherapeutic treatments or radiation. But a panacea statement to say safe with all medications, I don't think is something I'd be comfortable saying.
Okay. So, Doctor, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, let's pick up on the rest of the mushrooms. Actually, you touched on the chaga, but including that, we've got 5 more to discuss.
Looking forward to it.